In this section, we're going to be talking about one of the most important things when you get involved in a business, whether it's a startup business, whether it's an existing business, or even after you buy that company or get it started, you're going to find the key thing that's going to keep you going, and the key thing also that's going to enable you to expand is knowing how to finance that business. For those of you listening to this tape that are interested in either expanding your business or maybe you're interested in starting a business, the only thing that's not going to basically apply in your area will be the first one, which is owner financing. But you're going to find that the rest of the different items that we have in here will apply in all different areas of business. Now, even though you haven't heard about a lot of these different techniques that I'm about to talk about on this tape, the thing I want you to realize, we've been out working in the financing business business for over 30 years now. And although the average technique that you'd read about if you bought one of those crazy books on how to start or buy a business mentioned things like going to banks and using the Small Business Administration, you're going to find, although we mentioned that and we'll be going through that in this section, you're going to find they are not material. We don't use those that often. And when we do, we're normally using things like bank financing for short-term financing, which we then try to replace with financing that costs us a lot less money and maybe gives us more time to pay it back. Now, the first thing we're going to run into is a thing called owner financing. Now, as you keep in mind, there's three basic categories and areas of financing. Number one, we have a thing called owner financing. A second broad category that we're going to go into on this tape is a thing called supplier and vendor financing. And again, these are people that you're in business with, and these are your suppliers, your vendors, or people that you're supplying with goods and services. And then the third general category is going to be institutional financing. Now, as we go through this, in order to define it for you, we've divided it in those three sections in this chapter, which is chapter 6. And then what we've done also is we have another section where we're going to go into a number of other financing areas that tie into these different categories. Now, first of all, let's start off by talking about what happens if there's no owner financing. Well, for those of you that have very little money or you're out financing a business and don't really have a lot to work with, one of the things that's going to give you trouble if you don't have owner financing is the fact that it's going to kill your cash flow. Because you're going to find owners, in most cases, are willing to carry back financing. They're willing to let you put so much down as a buyer of a business, and then they will finance the 75%, whatever it happens to be, over a period of time. When an owner is not willing to do that, they give you problems. Number one, if you look at page 6-1, what we're telling you is, if there's no owner financing available, number one, lending institutions consider this a danger sign and will be reluctant to lend their money to you for two reasons. A, the owner is usually telegraphing the fact that he thinks that you, the buyer, cannot run the business properly, or the business doesn't make enough profit to repay the loan. Remember also, it lowers the value of the business when you're in buying it. And we're going to talk about that in the section that we discuss the pricing or valuation of the business. The thing you have to realize in this area, and I want to emphasize this a number of times, if you don't get the owner financing, you're going to have to come up with a bit of money on your own. Because the other type of financing you have that you normally replace this with is five-year financing at very high interest rates. As you go through this section, you're going to find if we get the owner financing, we not only have 10, 15, 20 years to pay for this, but we also have it at a lower interest rate, which means you have more cash flow. In most cases, when you go out to finance, if you're able to finance a business 100% without the owner financing and without funds of your own, you usually find that the amount of money you have left is very little, and in most cases you're going to find you have negative cash flow. For those of you lucky enough to go out without owner financing and still finance at 100%, you're going to find that you have a tad or a little bit of cash left. And what happens is during that five-year loan period, if there's a little bump in the economy, you're going to end up sinking your ship. And I just want to tell you something. Over the years, I've had an opportunity to work with hundreds and hundreds of people from our programs. And every one of them that went out and didn't listen to me in this area, did not get the owner financing, ended up having massive problems. And the basic thing you're going to have a problem with is you're going to find this fantastic business, you're going to buy it, and for 5 years, you're not going to have anything. And all of a sudden, you're going to run into somebody else from our program. They went out and bought the same size business, got the right financing, and right from day one, they have the great life. They have the good life. What are you going to do, wait 5 years to get it? And all I'm telling you is I'm warning you. If you don't get the owner financing, what I suggest you do is give the business back to the owner and sidestep down the street. I don't like businesses when they don't have financing available. In our brokerage businesses, we won't allow our brokers to handle businesses or list them if they don't have financing. Why? They're just too tough to put together. Going down to B on 6-1, we're talking about the normal down payment. And what you're going to find with owner financing, the average owner in the United States is going to ask you to put down 25%, and they'll finance the other 75%. In this area, we start to get into the negotiation technique, and what we've talked about in this program is the fact that we don't like you to make an offer until you've talked to the other party at least three times, whether you're the buyer, seller, agent, whatever you happen to be in the transaction. The buyer and seller should get together at least three times to verbally negotiate. And what happens is then during the verbal negotiation of your three or four meetings before you make the written offer, yet the buyer and seller have a chance to get to know each other, have a chance to trust each other. Now, over the years, I've been involved in selling a number of businesses, I mean, with me being the seller. And again, even though I've said I would take 25, 30, 50% down, I was really kidding myself and the person I was talking to because I didn't know who the person was going to be that was going to buy the company. Would I finance? Probably, if I knew and liked the buyer. But if I didn't know the buyer, if I didn't like the buyer, or if I didn't trust the buyer, I wanted all cash. So this is the thing you have to keep in mind as you negotiate. And if you find that you, as the buyer, are not able to get to talk to the seller because of maybe a broker in the middle or something like that, what I suggest you do is figure a way to get around that broker, or what you're going to have to do is consider buying a different business. And again, why not do that? There's more of them out there than you can possibly buy. So don't get hung up on one specific business. Now, as you start to negotiate, you have to realize there's only a few things that you're really going to be negotiating between buyer and seller. One thing is the price. The other thing is what kind of financing do we have available and the terms of the financing. And although we're not going to talk about it now, the other thing is, will a seller stay for a while and train? And when you have three sessions with buyer and seller, and maybe you're spending an hour or two each session, you're going to find in any 1 or 2 hour session that you do have, you're going to probably spend 7, 10, maybe 12 minutes discussing the details, and the rest of the time you're going to be getting to know the other party. Okay, so don't get hung up on it. In fact, let's get rid of the word negotiation. You're going to have a wrap session. You're going to have a discussion session with the other party. The first thing we do is we're talking to the owner. Again, we're trying to arrive at the price, and we talk about it each time. The owner will say, I want X number of dollars. And we then try to find out how firm or soft that price is. And if they start at $100,000, we're asking, would you accept $90,000 or $80,000? Trying to find out where their hot button is, and then cutting it off at each meeting and trying to bring them down lower, again, using that technique. And then later in the program, we'll be talking about using the balance sheet. Now, as you start to think about this financing, what we're going to ask the owner is, would you like to have all cash? Would you like to finance? And again, I know you're trying to get a yes response, but the thing you should realize is try to find out if the owner will finance. And most owners, if they are reasonable people and are starting to like you, are going to say, yes, we will let you in with so much down. Now, I'm not going to say that some of the owners won't start off with 100% and want all cash, but why not talk to them, work with them, verbally negotiate, and once they get to know you, you're going to find most of them will finance. If they don't, you better beware. You better find out why they want all cash. And you're usually going to find there's some other problem here. Now, the first thing we do is try to get 20-year financing when we're talking about the financing. Now, some owners are going to start off by saying, gosh, I'll give you 1, 2, 3, 4 years to pay for it. And most of them will also add that the reason they're asking for the money in 1 or 2 years is they're helping you. You should then go back to the seller and explain that if you have to pay it off in 2 years, you're going to have negative cash flow. You're going to have to add other money to the business, which doesn't make sense. And what happens then, especially in the larger businesses over 50,000, many of the sellers have already talked to their CPAs and worked it out financially. And many of them are very smart people, and they realize that if they don't give you, the buyer, enough breathing room on your financing, your chance of making it isn't very good. So a lot of them will start with 10-year financing, which is beyond what we normally talk about. As soon as they start to mention 10 years, as you negotiate verbally, ask them if they would consider going 20. Most of them will. As you get to the point where you have them out at 20 years, you're great. You're in good position. If the person happens to be highly motivated and really wants to sell and they're a 10 out of 10 on a scale of motivation, I'd suggest you try to push it out to 25 or 30 years. Now, in doing this, you're not going to pick up a lot of additional cash flow in the business, but again, maybe it's just principal. Now, remember, as you do this, and we're asking to pay it off in 20 years or 25 or 30, it's 20 or sooner. That gives you the opportunity as the buyer to pay it off sooner and not have a penalty by having to pay maybe all the interest. Because what we're trying to do is get you the maximum amount of time to pay for it. And if you decide because things are doing very well or you feel better without financing, you can pay it off in 5 years or whatever you decide to do. But give yourself a lot of breathing room. If the owner then backs off or balks or refuses when you're asking for 20-year payments, and he backs off and says, look, I want to retire when I'm 15 years from now. What you say to him is, say, look, let's amortize. And by amortizing, we're talking about let's have nice equal payments as if we were going to pay it off over a 20-year period. Now, what we're going to find is it's not going to go 20 years, and the owner wants the money in 15. Now, if the benefit to the buyer is to get the longest payments possible, as if it were going to go 20, what we do then to satisfy both the buyer and seller, we do a thing called ballooning it. In other words, we will have a due date in 15 years, and we end up with a balloon payment. What does that mean? That means we make nice equal payments starting from year one, as if we were going to pay it off in 20 years. At the end of 15, since we still have 5 years to go, there's going to be an amount of money due that we still have to pay over the next 5 years. What we do then is have a due date. All the money becomes due at the end of 15 years, and we have a thing called a balloon, which is a large amount of money, which is the money you owe for the next 5 years, due and payable at that time. You're going to find that 15-year balloon is not going to hurt you bad, or too bad in business. You're going to find, though, that we don't like you to balloon or end up with a balloon payment under 10 years. And a lot of you are going to run into balloon payments at 5, 6, 7. I'm trying to warn you, you're going to get in trouble. Why? Because a business is very difficult to refinance. Because once you refinance it, you're not going to have the big basic thing you had, which was owner financing. So what I want you to do is consider one thing. Try to get out to at least 10. By that time, you'll have paid down the loan. Inflation will have made the dollars a lot cheaper. And you'll have a number of things that you own free and clear, so that if you did have to finance something or refinance something, you can do it. And you're not going to get hung up. But remember, no balloons under 10 years. If you do that, you're going to become another sad story, another horror story. As soon as you've worked out the period of years, and again, you're doing it over 3 or 4 meetings. And again, if you get it up to 10 years the first meeting, that's fantastic. And then move it on meeting by meeting as you verbally negotiate with the seller. The next thing you're going to have here is a thing called the interest rate. And the thing that goofs many people is many of you offer too high an interest rate. Remember, the repayment period on a loan can be 10, 15, 20 years. Even if the going interest rate is high, and it can be, it probably will not remain that high. Banks tend to give us all a feeling in the United States that interest rates are always going to remain at the level they're at or go higher. We usually recommend paying only 7 or 8% interest on carryback. Naturally, as a buyer, if the seller is highly motivated, why not offer 6? If you happen to be the seller, on the other hand, let's face it, this program is addressed to both buyers and sellers. You might want 10% or 12. But keep in mind one thing, and think about this, especially if you're the buyer negotiating with the seller. Ask the seller, what has the average interest rate been over the last 20 years? And most of them will agree, as they search their memory, that the interest rate's only been 6 or 7. So what you have to realize is, and most times, even in the worst times when the prime rate went up into the 20s, most owners were carrying back on financing at 9 or 10%. As the interest rate went down below that, we got it down to 7, 8, 9% interest again. Again, we are not in the business as business owners to charge interest rates that banks do because we don't want to end up destroying the buyer. So even though some sellers may start off at a higher interest rate, you're going to find by negotiating, which is just verbally talking to them, you're going to be able to get them down to a nice interest rate. And what you're going to find is it'll improve your cash flow, which is what you're after. Now, once you have arrived at the owner financing, and again, I want to tell you something. Most of you don't spend enough time working on the owner financing when you're buying an existing business. Now, since the owner financing represents 75% of the total financing you need, this is the mistake you make. You get so hung up on the down payment financing, you get so hung up on working capital, which are the small numbers, that you don't take care of the big one at 75. If you set up and the 75% financing is for a nice long term at a very low interest rate, you're going to find there's enough cash flow left so it's easy to finance the rest and also have money left. In almost every case when I'm working with you and you've come back to me and big tears in your eyes tell me that you can't finance the business you're working on, it's usually because the basic financing, which was 75% of the total value, is the one you skipped over. And what you have to do is concentrate on the big number. Once you have the big number worked out, you're going to find that the other numbers fall in. And think about it from a common sense standpoint. Wouldn't that make sense? And it does. The next thing we have that we get involved with as a general category is a thing called inter-business financing. And we're talking about actually having people that we're doing business with finance us. We're talking about suppliers. They supply us with goods and services. These are people we're supplying. Why do they do this? To keep us in business because we're supplying. We're a good source of whatever their product happens to be or they're trying to sell to us. In many cases, we are their customer. Now, the first thing you're going to run into in inter-business financing, as we talk about financing categories or areas of business, whether it's on startup or whatever, this works on startup, it works on expansion, it works in all areas. The first one is unsecured open book trade credit, which means people will come to your business, They will then provide you with credit. They'll let you pay in a week, 2 weeks, a month. And again, as you establish better credit with these people, they're going to give you longer and longer to pay for it. But the first one we're talking about, Category 1, it's due in a few days. The next category, and the one we run into most often, is a thing called extended trade credit, which means we're paying 30, 60 days, 90 days more than normal, which means we have more time to pay for it. And what you're going to find is we can use this also as a source of financing. Because what you're going to find, and we talked about this example in another section of this program, you're going to find that if on the average you have a thing called accounts payable, and they're $100,000, and you happen to pay them every so often. In fact, if we want to make it easier, why don't we go back to the original example we used in one of the other sections on creative financing, and we'll talk about a business that had $200,000 of accounts payable. And in that business, we had $200,000 of accounts payable, and they were due in 30 days. Now, again, we keep talking about this, that the fact that some owners pay cash, and they think paying in 30 days gives you bad credit. We're also going to find that people pay in 30 days think people that pay cash are stupid. And what you're going to find is 30 days, although it's a standard in the books, as you get out in the real world, you're going to find that you can get 45 days credit, 60, 90, 120, 180. On the other hand, you have to realize, for those of you non-believers and think that everything's going to be 30-day, where do you start to get out in the real world and find that your customers are coming to you and they're going to ask for 60 or 90? And what you're going to find is if you don't keep the receivables and payables balanced up, you are going to end up going to the bank to have to borrow money. As we're able to extend credit, and let's say we did have $200,000 and it was due in 30 days, if we're able to extend that another 30 days, we're going to end up with another $200,000 of working capital that we can use. And although we use a large part of that for working capital, as you become more knowledgeable in buying businesses, you're going to find that you don't have to put all the money down. If the owner wants $25,000 down, you could always give them $10,000 down during the escrow or closing period, and then pay them the rest of the money maybe 10, 15, 20, 30 days after the close. You may even have to make it 60 days after the close. How would you pay for it then? Well, as you get your credit extended out, say for an extra 30 days, that supplier money that you normally would have paid to the supplier at that period, which is not due now because you have more time to pay for it, you could use that money to pay off that loan. Again, we'll talk more about that later. Next category is long-term open book. And this is credit where it's due in 6 months to several years. Where we run into this quite often is when we're borrowing money from a supplier and we're borrowing money for the down payment. Right, we're not talking about extended credit. We're actually talking about borrowing money from the supplier. And what happens is they want us to pay it back in 6 months, maybe several years. Sometimes it's only called when the customer drops the supplier. In other words, your supplier is going to lend you the money, say, when you're buying a business or for expansion or starting a business. In many cases, they don't want you to pay it back for one very good reason. What they'd like you to do is be tied to them, okay, because you happen to be a good customer. And a way to tie you to them is to lend you money. And you're going to find as long as you're doing business with them, you don't have to pay it back. The other thing you're going to find, especially in dealing with suppliers, if they do lend you money, very seldom do they ever charge you interest, which is a very good way to go because you can improve your cash flow. The next category is the inventory sent to the customer on consignment. And the supplier retains title and control, and that's what we're after. Because in the area on pricing, where we talked about pricing or valuing a business, the thing we had problems with was the fact that you have to really pay yourself a return on any amount of money that you have, say, invested in inventory. And wouldn't it be nice to have $100,000 of inventory and not own any of it, not have to pay yourself a return, not have your $100,000 tied up in the inventory? And one way to do it is have it there on consignment, which means basically they are placing that material, that inventory, in your place of business, but you don't own it. And what happens is at that last moment as somebody buys it, the money is handed to you. You then give them the title to it or possession of it and or possession of it, and you then end up paying the person that has given you these goods on consignment. But the great thing about it is you are basically selling something that you don't have any money invested in. And you're going to find in business, if you want to become very successful in business, you don't really want to own inventory. You don't want to own equipment. You don't want to own anything. Because in a business, if you really want to understand it, and we're going to go through this a number of times, what we want you to understand is all we want you to own is what? The cash flow. Who wants to own all these other crazy things? You want to own the cash flow. You want to own the money. That's the purpose in business. As we say, this is the bottom line. Inventory sent to the customer, again, we're number five, using a field warehouse. In business today, I can't predict where you're going to be, whether you're going to be the person as a supplier or the person receiving the goods. But what's happened over the years is many people have abused the thing called flooring, which we'll talk about in a little while. And what happens is somebody will come in and they abuse flooring, they abuse consignment. And how do they abuse consignment? Well, people with consignment goods, and they give you these goods to show and sell, they don't want to leave them there for 4 or 5 years. What they tell you basically is, we're going to put them there on consignment, but what we'd like you to do is sell them in 60 days or 90 days. When that doesn't work too well, many times they will convert consignment and call it flooring. When they call it flooring, they're doing the same basic thing as they do in consignment, except what they say to you is, for 60 days we're going to floor you, and there's no charge. Then after that, we're going to have a rate. For those of us that are having problems and need more consignment, or you need more flooring, we then will go back on the counterattack as we negotiate and ask them to set up a field warehouse. A field warehouse, and we're going to get to the definition in a short while, a field warehouse basically is a situation where maybe your credit isn't too good, or maybe there's some special financing with a bank, which we'll talk about later in this section. But what happened is they may take a token amount in the back of your business or the back of your warehouse. They may fence it off. There may be a person from a warehouse company that will be in there, a warehouseman, checking the goods in and out. As your credit improves, you're going to find that they will turn the actual warehousing control over to one of your people. And then as your credit gets even better or you have a better relationship, they'll take the fence down. What we're after is we try to get people to set up a field warehouse and have the supplier, the person supplying the goods, supply it. We also get the supplier, instead of having to go through a bank and pay a large interest rate, we ask the supplier to provide this, naturally trying to get our supplier to do this at no cost. And what we end up doing it by doing it this way, if we get it for no cost, we end up getting consignment by calling it a thing called field warehousing. And you may say, gosh, you're Mickey Mouse in this area, you're playing games. Well, it may be a form of business playing or business games, but the thing I want you to realize, is this any worse than the companies you're working with when they're telling you that basically you had consignment and it's not going to become flooring? What you're trying to do is get the consignment to go back to a thing that doesn't cost you anything. And what are you going to call it? One thing that we use quite often is a thing called a field warehouse. 6, the dealer's accounts receivable financed by the supplier. Later in this section, we're going to talk about financing accounts receivable, going to a person, a factoring company, going to a bank, going to a finance company, and actually borrowing against the accounts receivable. Did you ever think of going to a supplier and having them finance them? And again, what you can do is you could put them up as security. You can borrow against them. But the fascinating thing is most suppliers won't charge you interest on that, which means you save a ton of money if you have to borrow on receivables. The next thing is the accounts receivable are sold to the supplier. Later in this section, as we talk about factoring, you're going to find that you can take your receivables as you receive them and sell them to a factor on a daily basis. What happens is they convert those to cash, and you can use those for working capital and running your company. But do you ever think of going back to your suppliers and selling them to your suppliers? Because if you do this, you save a lot of money, because factoring can be very expensive. If you can get your suppliers to do that for you, you're going to find it works very well. You're probably wondering why suppliers and other people are going to do this. You have to realize that you are the customer, and you're always right. And for those of you little faith, as you go through this section and don't believe this can be done, as you get into business, you're suddenly going to find within a couple of months that the things that you didn't believe could be done are going to be done. How? People working with you are going to come to you for this type of financing. What I'm trying to get you to do is go out and get as much of this financing as possible before they come back on the other side and get it from you. Because he or she who doesn't listen to me and doesn't go out and get this financing and get more of it from the other person before they get it from you, whoever doesn't do that has to go to the well. You have to go to the bank. Whoever's at the end of the line and is not getting some other type financing from another person in business is going to have to go to the bank to borrow money. And what you end up doing is you end up being in the banking business. And you don't want to do that. If you haven't found out why, you will as you get in business. The next area is a supplier lends the equipment to a dealer. And if you get involved in grocery stores, convenience marts, a lot of you have a feeling that in a big supermarket, that the supermarket chain owns everything. And you're going to find that the ice cream boxes are owned by the ice cream companies. You're going to find the milk boxes and other boxes and shelving that you have in there are actually supplied and given to or loaned to the person that owns that business. Why? That's one of the conditions that you have in that type business. If you want the shelf space, if you want to put your product in, then you supply the container, the racks, or the freezer boxes or the refrigeration boxes. If you're one of these persons that likes to go out and buy this equipment, I think you're crazy. And you're going to say, well, gosh, if I go out and do that, they're going to charge me a lot more. No, they're not. Because what they're doing is they're trying to buy themselves a location. And if they then end up buying a location and raising your price, what's going to happen is you're going to replace them with somebody else. Keep in mind one thing. There's always more people trying to enter any one area of the market than their openings. And what the smart people do, or the people do with money, is they buy their way in. And that's why we're able to get financing. That's why we're able to get a lot of extra things, as long as you know what area to go after. Supplier leasing equipment to a dealer. Now, again, you're going to say, what do you save on leasing? On the average lease, when you're going out to buy new equipment or even pick up used equipment, you're going to find the lease payments are one of the most expensive types of financing you're normally going to get from a bank or a finance or a leasing company. You're also going to find the terms are 3, 4, or 5 years normally, maybe a little longer, but usually that, which means the amount of money you're going to have to put up every month to make these payments is horrendous. You're going to find out by going to a supplier many times, you can take this large piece of equipment, let them buy it, and you can lease it back from them. And when you lease it back, we usually try to keep the interest rate very low. As a matter of fact, what I want to tell you is we always go after paying no interest, because the normal interest rate paid from business owner to business owner in any type of financing or any type of credit is zero. Now, I don't want to put this down and say, well, gosh, always go for zero. If you find that you have to go to the bank and the bank's going to charge you 14 or 15% or whatever the amount happens to be, and your supplier wants 7 or 8, well, I'd rather pay zero. But if push comes to shove and it's the only financing I can get and it's less expensive than the bank financing, don't call me and ask. What I want you to do is go out and get it. The supplier sells the equipment to a dealer on a time plan. And again, if you go out to buy equipment, your payments are going to be very high. And again, the amount of time you have to pay for the equipment is not a long period, which means your payments per month are going to be very large. One of the easy ways to do it, again, is do the same thing you did under leasing. Go to the supplier, let them buy it, and set up a time payment plan with you. And again, the interest rate is normally nothing or very little. And for those of you a little faith that don't believe people will do this, again, people eventually are going to come to you and have you do it for them. Why will you do it? Because the customer is always right. A cash loan to buy equipment, yes. A lot of times we'll need cash, and instead of going to a bank, we'll go to another person we're in business with or working with and borrow the money from them. A short-term note. The only reason I put this in there is number 12 is the fact that with a short-term note, what we're talking about is possibly paying back a supplier for money they loaned you for working capital or to buy a business. Quite often you're going to find that the owner of a business, when they're lending you money, will not ask you to sign a note. And you, as the person borrowing it, very nervous. And you wonder why you don't have to sign something. And the reason they don't ask you to sign it is, so you're borrowing $30,000, $40,000, or maybe $50,000. Your company that you're buying already owes $80,000 or $100,000 just on the money or on the goods that they delivered that you didn't pay for. And on the goods they delivered, they didn't ask you to sign a note. So what you're going to find is it's sort of pretty loose. But if you do insist that you want to sign a note, fine, sign a note. That's the only reason I mention it here. The next thing is a term loan to a dealer for any purpose. And I hate to mention this. We have not only gone out over the years and borrowed from other people in business for business purposes. I haven't done this personally, but we've had a number of people in our program that during times when money was very tight actually went to suppliers to borrow money for a home. And although you may say, gosh, how could I borrow $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 from a supplier? Well, you have to realize everything is relative. And maybe on a $300,000 business, this is not practical. It's not going to work. But if you're working in an area of business, maybe where you're doing $5 or $10 million a year, and one supplier is doing $1 or $2 million with you, or $3 million, you have to realize the amount you're borrowing probably only represents the same amount as the goods you're borrowing from them every month. In fact, the amount you're buying in this or borrowing in this area is not much more than what they deliver to you in goods. So they trust you in that area. So you have to think of it from a relative standpoint, even though some of these numbers are a little larger than you're used to working with. Equity investment in the dealer's business. And for those of you a little faith that don't think you can get the supplier or vendor to lend you money, I always give you a little tricky thing and say, if you don't have any confidence in what I'm teaching or trying to project to you, why don't you go out to a supplier vendor and say, look, I'd like to borrow $50,000, but I don't want you to have no security. I'll give you a note, but I'll also give you 25% of my business. Why don't you do that? Once you then have secured the money from the other party and you're about to close and take over the business, why don't you just turn to them and say, you know, I've given you 25% of the business for you putting up the money. Would you have forwarded the money to me if I didn't do that and give you part of the business? In almost every case, they're going to say, yes, I would, which means you just gave away part of your business. But for those of you little faith, if you don't think it works any other way, try it with a note. The next thing is an equity investment in the dealer's business. Excuse me, I already talked about that. And the last area is flooring. And again, flooring is something that we already mentioned. And what we're doing here is they're talking about flooring goods. And what they mean is they are delivering goods to you, and it's sort of like an offshoot of consignment, which means they are placing automobiles with you, refrigerators, stoves. And instead of having you pay for them now, they are flooring them. Now, we're going to get to the actual definition later. And when they are flooring them, again, there might be an interest rate due in 2 months or 3 months. What they end up doing is saying, okay, the first month's flooring is free. Now, that is not always the case, because with flooring, you may find they are delivering the goods. They are basically keeping title of them, and what they're doing is they are financing them for you. Later in this section, I'm going to show you how banks do the same thing with a thing called flooring, and I'll show you how that works, and you'll have more complete definition. The next area, the one we've been talking about, is our third category, our third general category, and it's called lending institution financing. In other words, we're working with banks, we're working with the Small Business Administration. These are the institutional type financing. And if you've already gone through the pricing section, you'll notice this is the same way we break it down when we're trying to analyze a business to figure out how much it's worth. What kind of financing do we get? And one of the categories that we do get a lot of financing from is lending institution. Again, you're going to find as we go through the program that we usually try to convert this to something we can live with a lot better. Let's go through the types of loans here on 6.5. And the first type loan you're going to find is a simple commercial loan. It's usually a loan for 30 to 90 days based on a financial statement, often unsecured. Now, for those of you that buy a lot of real estate or have been involved in a lot of real estate, you're going to find when you buy real estate, they're going to put a lien on your real estate, deed of trust, mortgage, something like that. The thing that's going to fascinate you in business, for those of you a little faith, you're going to find that in many cases, the lending institutions are lending you money, and it's not secured. They're not asking you to put up something as security. There's always good news and bad news. Of course, the bad news in this area is you've also signed personally, which means they can go after you and attach or go after any assets you have. A character loan. These are made as individual rather than business credit. In other words, you're going in to borrow money on your business, and what they're really doing is lending money to you, the individual, based on your ability to do things. Again, you're usually signing personally here. Over the years, I have signed personally a number of times. I don't know how many times, but I say up into the hundreds and maybe thousands of times, and every time I have, it has backfired on me. Today, my motto is, if I have to sign personally, I'm not going to do it. And although many of you are starting out for the first time, I promise you in the next few years that almost every time that you sign personally, it's going to end up burning you. Whenever you can, try not to sign personally. Now, for those of you listening to this tape that are lending the money, I would suggest you tie up everything you can. And this is a difficult thing when you're trying to teach or educate people in a program like this. We're trying to protect buyers. We're trying to protect sellers, agents, attorneys, CPAs. And I'll keep trying to tell you over and over again, let's go after win-win situations. Let's go after a situation where the buyer and seller both make out. Why do we have to rip off the other party? I've been in business many years, and I've done very well. And I found out one basic thing. You can make more money honestly in business than you can dishonestly, in spite of some of the soap operas you watch. Installment loans. Again, these are used for many business purposes. I'm sure many of you know what an installment loan is because you've been involved in them. And they're usually used by larger banks. As loans reduce, it's possible to refinance at a better rate. The loans may be tailored to a seasonal requirement of the business. And you're going to find as we get in the program that in certain businesses, especially like retail, you may be around the Christmas season and you're going to have a special requirement. And we'll get involved in that as we cover other categories. The second part, we've turned to 6.7. We're talking about lending institution financing. One of the first things we have is a short-term loan, which is 1 year or less. These are usually easier to get than intermediate loans, which are 1 to 5 years. These are often unsecured. In other words, we're going in, we're asking for a 90-day loan. We're normally asking for a working capital loan. Again, this working capital may also constitute part of the down payment. Why don't we say it's down payment? Most people don't like to hear down payment. They don't like to know we're borrowing that part of it. And for those of you bankers that are listening to this tape, I just want you to realize that the people we educate, if they follow the complete program, will not only end up financing a business 100% or close to it, but they also end up with a large percent of cash left over. And what we're trying to look for is usually 30 to 50% of the cash left. And the reason we've done that is most banks we work with would like to see at least 30. And since we tend to be a little more conservative, we're trying to push it up to 35, 40, or 50%. And it is possible mathematically. Now, remember, these are easier to get. They're often unsecured. Once we've gotten these 90-day loans, you're going to find that once you renewed it, and what will happen is you go in every 90 days, and the bank then will ask you to pay the interest, and then if you want to renew it, you can, or pay it off. And if you've been a good boy and good girl, they'll renew it for another 90 days, and you don't have to see them for another 90 days. Once you've done this a number of times, the banks will normally increase these and make these 180 days so they don't have the processing problems. I just want to say one thing. I've had a few of these over the years, but I always feel bad about them because I feel like something's hanging over my head. It's a loan that's easy to call. It's a loan that may not be renewed. And usually, if it did come up and not be renewed, it'd probably be at a time when I was having problems and I couldn't repay it. So try to get these paid off as soon as possible. Also, if you've signed personally, try to get these paid off. It's just good business sense.
This concludes side one. To continue, please turn the cassette over.